Welcome back to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks, as always, for listening. Among the big decisions Governor Rick Scott has to make in the days ahead is spending billions of dollars on public education, including millions more on charter schools. The decisions come in two pieces of legislation. One is the big overall education spending bill. The other is a package of education reforms called House Bill 7069. Neither is a popular idea with PTA members throughout the state or with public school educators. This is Miami-Dade Superintendent Alberto Carvalho.
If House Bill 7069 is vetoed, then there are $400-plus million that can be reinvested into the state budget, increasing the per-pupil funding level, guaranteeing the opportunity of teacher salary increases, guaranteeing the coverage of health insurance needs in districts, provided for the utility increase approved by the state. Anything other than that is just flirting with disaster.
The Miami-Dade County Public School District is the broadcast license holder of WLRN, but has no editorial control. Now, a separate piece of legislation in front of the governor eventually will provide $140 million for charter schools opening in neighborhoods with failing public schools if the governor decides to sign it. Here is Florida House Speaker Republican Richard Corcoran, who supported the spending.
In the K-12 space, we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars, more than ever before, to say that it is reprehensible that you would take a child and make them stay in a failure factory, not for 1 year, not for 2 years, not for 3 years, not for 4 years, but 5 years. That whole system has to end, and so we're going to fund it in a way that we think ends that system. And the current way we fund it has not ended that system, as we witness. So hopefully this will work.
The bill also allows charter schools to share money that had been earmarked for traditional school building and equipment projects. And the Miami Herald reports today at least two charter schools in Miami-Dade have offered parents credit if they write a letter of support to Governor Rick Scott. So here we are in the Florida Roundup. Should charter schools get equal access to funds traditional public schools get? Aaron in Miami sent us this text. No, they shouldn't. They don't receive the same oversight and they undermine our public education systems. Stacy in Hollywood. No, charter schools are not as accountable and can exclude students with special needs. Wendy in Miami. Public education is a foundation of our democracy. Charter and for-profit or religious schools should not be included in public education funding. And Michael in Miami. Public schools are either underfunded or run inefficiently. He texts us, if private industry can provide a valuable service to an underserved or unserved population at the minimum of funding, then why not let it in? Join the conversation, 800-743-9576. Let your voice be heard throughout South Florida. 800-743-WLRN is the telephone number. Jessica Bakeman covers education policy and politics for Politico in Florida. She joins us from our sister station, WFSU in Tallahassee. Jessica, I'll begin here with you. Sort out the two bills. First, the big budget bill, almost $24 billion. How much are K-12 schools in line to get?
So there's actually the budget, and then there's a lot of other bills, one of them being the conforming bill, HB 7069, that everybody's talking about. But in the General Appropriations Act, there's $20.4 billion for public schools, which includes a small increase for public schools that accounts for not only the increase of students that will be coming in, but a $24 per student increase, although that could potentially mean reductions in some districts. It's not going to be good news for all districts, and pretty much most districts think it's got to go.
Superintendents and public educators and parents have seized upon that number. $24 in additional funding per pupil spending is what the Florida legislature passed. But superintendents across the state, not just here in South Florida, Jessica, have argued it could mean actually a drop in per student funding. How does that work?
Well, the way that public schools are funded is through a formula called the Florida Education Finance Program, or the FEFP. And there are lots of different categories in the FEFP that when you apply all of the funding, it goes through the different categories and it goes to schools differently based on the types of students they serve. So actually the base student allocation, which is the base number per student, is decreasing by $27. Now, there's money going into some of the other categories that makes it so that overall it's a $24 increase. But those categories affect different school districts differently. So, for example, rural school districts could see bigger decreases. Also, even with a $24 increase, think about the fact that the governor and the Senate initially had proposed increases of hundreds of dollars mm-hmm. per pupil, and then in the past couple of years, the increases to public education have been in the hundreds of dollars per pupil. So $24 is very small, and many school districts argue it's not going to keep pace with the growing costs that they have, such as health insurance for their teachers. So that could mean that there will be cuts.
Jessica Bateman covering education policy. Cuts to teachers is what you're saying. Cuts to staff.
Right. I mean, districts will deal with the budget situation in different ways, but they could potentially have to deal with, you know, a decrease in funding by not, you know, hiring as many teachers.
Sure. So that's one decision that the governor is going to have to make when that piece of legislation lands on his desk. And Jessica, as you mentioned, the other kind of comprehensive piece is the so-called House Bill 7069. Rowan Moore-Garrity covers education for us here at WLRN. What is in this House bill, especially in regarding to charter schools? Because that seems to be the lightning rod here. There's a lot in this bill, but the charter schools portion is the one that's gained a lot of public outcry.
Yeah, that's right. So there are 55, I think you might want to double check that, but I think 55 pieces of legislation that all got crammed into this bill in the last few days of session. And one sort of set of criticisms has been around the process. People didn't really know what was in this bill because a lot of it was being negotiated privately among small groups of legislators rather than out on the floor. But the charter schools piece of it is a program called Schools of Hope. And basically the problem it's trying to solve is that there are neighborhoods across Florida, primarily in the urban core, where schools have had low, meaning D or F school grades for a number of years running. And parallel to that, although Florida has a lot of charter schools, charter school advocates have said, we don't have the right mix of charter schools, and we don't have those charter schools in the right places. And so there are programs like Green Dot or KIPP that have, I guess, you know, a track record of a certain kind working with populations in really poor neighborhoods that legislators who propose this want to bring to Florida. And the way they're going to do that is say, we're going to give you extra money if you set up in these zip codes with struggling schools.
And then there's another portion of the legislation, another one of those 55 pieces crammed in here, will open up what are called capital outlays, essentially public money that was usually destined for traditional public school buildings and equipment, and allow charter schools to have a portion of those funds.
Right. And so there's sort of two sets of concerns around that. One is, should charter schools be getting this money in the first place? And the point that critics
They previously have not been eligible for the access?
No. Charter schools obviously have capital costs, and there are some categories of capital expenditures they're allowed, or there are some categories of expenditure they're allowed to use their funding for. You have to run a school. Some background here is that a few years ago, the AP did an investigation which found that $70 million in taxpayer money in recent years had gone to charter schools that ultimately closed, and that the state really wasn't able to recoup that money. So you run a charter school, you're buying office equipment, desks, you might be paying rent, and then all of that, even though taxpayer funded it, if the school closes, or even if it doesn't, it just ends up in private hands. The other set of concerns is, who's going to lose that money?
Right.
And public schools right now basically raise taxes locally, and then they use that to spend on property insurance and to spend on building projects. And if you slice and dice that, they say, we're just not going to have enough to fund our program, and we're not going to even have enough to pay off the borrowing cost. And so it sort of throws a wrench in the gears of predictability for capital planning.
800-743-9576. Should charter schools have access to these public funds like traditional public schools have? 800-743-WLRN. I want to bring in Kristen Clark, reporter for our partner, the Miami Herald in Tallahassee, also with us from our sister station, WFSU in the capital city. Kristen, as coverage of this House bill, this comprehensive education reform bill, has continued to make the rounds, we know the governor's office has received thousands of emails and phone calls and letters, mostly in opposition to the legislation. And now charter schools themselves are beginning to respond. How?
Well, what we're seeing in Miami, at least this week, is there's at least two charter schools in the Hialeah area that we've seen just right on their homepage of their website. They're encouraging parents to write letters to Governor Scott saying, we support this bill. This is why charter schools are beneficial to our parents or to our children and why it's good for our communities, et cetera. But the hook is they're offering credit to these parents to reduce the volunteer hours that they're supposed to do at their child's school in order to send these letters. So they're essentially incentivizing them to support this bill, which is different than your average lobbying of just kind of grassroots efforts.
So, and the incentive here, charter school parents are required to volunteer a certain number of hours at the school every year. Is that right?
It's in general it's required, and sometimes it's strongly encouraged is the word.
Okay, strongly encouraged. And in this case, these charter schools are essentially offering parents a credit of an hour. You don't have to show up for a few hours. Instead, if you write a letter in support of this legislation to the governor.
Right, that's what they're saying, and it's 5 credit hours, I guess, that they're giving them, and at least in these 2 schools that we've seen evidence of. We don't know if there's more out there, and we honestly haven't seen any evidence at this point that traditional public schools are doing any sort of incentives, but they very well could be. If there's evidence, we'd be happy to hear it and report
sure.
on it.
Yeah.
But right now, all we know is these charter schools are doing this.
I'll get to your calls here in a moment, but I want to ask Kristen and Jessica here, is this opening up new ground in the political debate and the financial stakes of charter schools and traditional public schools, this kind of just even this incentivizing of charter school parents with the volunteer hours if they take political action? Kristen, how about you?
Well, it certainly makes it a lot more polarizing and a lot more of a volatile debate. I mean, as it stood, this bill was dividing your traditional public school advocates versus your charter school proponents. And then this just adds another kind of flame in the fire of a very, passionate debate where, parents want choice and parents, sometimes choose charter schools, sometimes they choose traditional schools. And there's a lot of very, passionate opinions on either side. And this probably just doesn't help ease the tension of that debate.
Some of those passionate opinions I know are waiting on the telephone. We'll get to them in a second. But Jessica Bagman with Politico, does this legislation, specifically the 7069 bill, this comprehensive reform bill, does it really begin to reshape public education funding and the formulas in the state of Florida?
Yeah, it absolutely does that. it does make a lot of changes, actually, to that formula that we talked about before. But, it's 278-page bill, and a lot of it has to do with charter schools, and not only including more funding for charter schools, but also just changing a lot of the laws that charter schools have said were obstacles to coming to Florida. So what they're trying to do with this bill is make it easier and make it more attractive for charter schools to come here, and with the Schools of Hope portion, specifically for charter schools to locate in an area where a traditional public school is struggling. And, the proponents say that gives those children who are in those struggling traditional public schools an opportunity to go elsewhere and potentially get a better education. Then there are the traditional public school advocates who say, well, our schools would be doing better if they had the proper funding and resources to begin with. And now you're going to give charter schools all of this freedom and flexibility, mm-hmm. even more than they already have, from the same bureaucratic structures that make it difficult for us to make changes and make improvements when we have struggles.
Let's hear from you now. We'll begin in Pompano Beach, where Michael is listening to the Florida Roundup. Michael, welcome. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, yes, I suppose my comment was simply that I feel that charter schools are wrong, not only wrong, but wrong in a way that specifically undercuts one of the best things about Florida public schools, which is the countywide school districts. So we don't have a situation here where, you can go out into the suburbs and have these great public schools, and meanwhile, your urban areas are left to rot. We have that equality across the board, and then when you start bringing in publicly funded schools that can, be selective and go where they want and all the things that you're talking about here, it undercuts something that I think is specifically one of the things that Floridians can be most proud about, which is the equality of our schools thanks to our countywide districts.
Michael, we appreciate the input. Rowan Moore-Garrity covering education. I think a lot of the charter school parents could push back against Michael's assessment that the reason why charter schools have become popular in some areas is because the inequalities that have existed in some of the neighborhoods.
Right. And I mean, there are a lot of shades of complexity to that, beginning with the fact that, Miami-Dade is an all-choice district, right? So theoretically, if you live in Homestead and you want to go to this magnet school in North Miami or a charter school in North Miami, you can go there. Now, good luck getting to school on time.
Yeah.
And there are other things that apply both to charter schools and to some degree to magnet programs and so forth within the public school system, where if you have a behavior problem, if you have a history of absences, there are all these little things that can be grounds for a school to say, actually, we don't want your student here. And so there are a lot of critiques people have made about the sort of shades of inequality among programs throughout the county.
Right. The charter school opponents will say the charter schools cherry pick the best students in some cases. Let's go to Miami, where Rick is on line two. Rick, you are on the radio. Welcome to the roundup.
Thank you very much.
Your thoughts, sir?
I think the charter schools should have access to those funds. Right now, there's no accountability on the teachers' behalf. There are, my experience has been mostly positive with the teachers, but there are a handful of teachers that should not be allowed to teach. And because of the unions and the way the policy works, they can't even get rid of these teachers that should not be getting paid. And they are getting paid even if they're placed in suspension. And so I think it just opens up the door to improvement. And I think they should have access to those funds.
Rick, we appreciate your thoughts. Thanks for sharing them with us. Jessica, I want you to address some of Rick's issues around accountability with teachers. Clearly, Rick, frustrated there in the traditional public school environment. What are the kind of rules of the road of teacher accountability, and how do they compare between charter and traditional schools?
Well, traditional public schools are required to do performance evaluations for their teachers, and those determine whether a teacher can keep his or her job. Before Rick Scott became governor, there was some form of what people think of as tenure in Florida for teachers at public schools. But actually, the first bill that he signed into law after becoming governor got rid of continuing contracts for new teachers. And actually, in this bill, HB 7069, there's a component that would make it harder for school districts to give teachers any kind of job protection. So basically, since that law was signed, a bunch of school districts have gotten together with their local teachers unions, and they've come up with these annual renewal agreements that say, okay, if you're a teacher and you're rated effective or highly affected, which are the top two categories under the performance evaluation, and there aren't other extenuating circumstances like fraud or suspension, maybe like he mentioned, then you would automatically get renewed and you'd get another year of employment. But the legislature doesn't like that. They say that goes against the spirit of the law that got rid of continuing contracts. And so they want to make it so that teachers unions and school districts can't do that. And that actually is in 7069. So there really aren't protections for teachers in Florida the way that there are in other states, like he was suggesting.
Gene in Miami also has a comment about teachers and charter schools. Gene, you are on the radio. Welcome to the roundup.
Hi, good afternoon. There are a couple of points I want to bring up, and a couple of callers ago, there was a gentleman, again, making ignorant statements, complaining about teachers without knowing that tenure is no longer a thing in Florida. So there are three things, absolutely. There are studies, social studies, any type of studies you can look at. Prisons, healthcare, and education. The moment you make them private, and now we're talking about education, so University of Phoenix, et cetera, shows you that they're not success, and their profit is the only object. If the object is to protect the children and to help the children, for-profit schools is not an option.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another thing, it appears that every time we have this conversation, the decisions are made by folks that have never been to some of these schools that are in, you know, troubled neighborhoods. They don't realize that for a lot of the kids, for a majority of those kids, school is not a place to learn, but a school is to get is the only meal they're going to get that day. They don't come to learn. Their parents, quite often, do not see value in education. So what you have is it's not an issue with teachers that are not professional and not effective. The issue is socioeconomic. If we want to attack it, if the goal is to protect the children, to give them better education, you don't just throw money at, valueless tests, test programs, you know, $200 million here and there. What you do is you attack it from a totally different side. But I don't know what the solution is, because we're talking about a very deep issue, right?
Very, very deep issue. And Gene, I'm just curious. You're talking about legislators making decisions, not visiting those on the ground schools. Do you have personal experience with those types of schools, those schools in those failing neighborhoods?
A person that I date is a teacher, and experience she had in one of those schools, it was basically every day was depression, tears. A teacher who wanted to teach, she's surrounded, of course, in every human endeavor, right, you'll find corruption. In every human endeavor, you'll find some employees that are great and others aren't. So that argument is that some teachers are not effective. It's irrelevant. It's not logical.
All right, Gene, we're going to let you go. I appreciate your input, though. Thanks for sharing it with us. Kristen Clark with the Miami Herald in Tallahassee. You know, Gene's concern about for-profit education versus the traditional role, there is still some nuance there to be had, that not all charters are for-profit, correct?
Well, right. I mean, the trick is a charter school is a public school, but they can be managed by a for-profit entity. And that's where you bring in some of the concerns, you know, take the capital outlay dollars, for instance,
right,
where these private businesses can profit off operating a public school. And there was actually, in the course of them cobbling together this massive bill, one of the provisions you would have thought would have made it in the final version actually was taken out in the process of these secret negotiations. And that was safeguards that lawmakers have wanted to put in at least for 2 years since that AP investigation that Rowan mentioned. And they would have made it a requirement that these properties are at least owned by governments or owned by a nonprofit or somehow at the very least not affiliated with anybody involved in the school. So you can't have people running a school and then turning around and cashing a check out of it.
Yeah.
And that was taken out of this bill.
That's not in 7069, one of the two big education bills that will have its fate decided by Governor Rick Scott in the days ahead. Kristen Clark, watching education and the Florida legislature for our partner, the Miami Herald in Tallahassee. Jessica Bakeman, education policy reporter for Politico in Florida, both of them with us in Tallahassee. Rowan Moore Garrity, watching education for us here in South Florida for WLRN. And thanks to all three of you for joining us on the roundup today. We have got plenty more to come. Medical marijuana and the money behind it. That is next as the roundup continues.